Three, 1, 2. Test, 1, 2, 1, 2. Test, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Gospel music. As you can see, our artists have not arrived as yet. There is a mass of humanity between here and the entertainment tent. They just came off from eating, and hopefully they will be here before 1:30 arrives. If not, what the heck? You've got me. I promise not to sing for you. The group that you will be looking at, Earlene Mills and the Ultrasound from Philadelphia, I would like to just make a couple of cultural comments. And that is that within gospel music, just as within blues or within jazz, there are regional variations. I talked with Pastor Mills this morning and asked her how would she discern any differences, let's say, between the sound of the gospel singers from the Philadelphia area, from when she has come, and let's say the gospel singers from Chicago. Her reply was that the gospel singers from Philadelphia have a clearer sound. She said that, in other words, that they strive to make each word discernible, clear, wherein gospel singers from Mississippi who migrate to Chicago tend to have a much rougher, a more guttural type of sound. So you might want to listen for that as you hear them come forward. We want to say, secondly, that the gospel group, which is the singers are all girls, all women, that there is a precedent for that in the city of Philadelphia. That before the coming of this group, you had the Davis sisters from Philadelphia, and perhaps the most famous female group of all, Claire Ward, the Ward Singers. I understand that they celebrated their 50th anniversary here last week, and there were groups who came back. But seemingly, a lot of female gospel singers have come out of Philadelphia, or at least come through there. The Caravans, another group, Shirley Caesar, who is perhaps the reigning queen of gospel music today, sang with that group. And you might even want to ask Pastor Mills about some of her experience, because she certainly has performed. She said one of the highlights of her career was playing for Mahalia Jackson, that Mahalia Jackson came to Philadelphia. Her accompanist was sick, and the person who normally accompanied her in Philadelphia was unable to fulfill it, and she got the chance to play with Mahalia. A couple of things that you should notice about the dress of the particular group, which says something about the aesthetic. They will be dressed in dresses, but they will be uniform dress. I don't know how many of you have seen any of the PBS shows with the West Coast group, the Hawkins Singers. There they tend to reflect the California or the Western lifestyle, the do-your-own-thing style. In other words, you would have maybe 100 or 50 singers, but every singer would be dressed in something entirely different. There is no sense of uniform there. Wherein the Midwestern and Eastern gospel singing groups, they will either be dressed in robes, or they will be dressed, as in the case this past week of the new of the Sensational Cherubims, in matching suits. So there's a sense of uniformity, which the Midwest and the East tends to have held on to, wherein the California style of expression is much different. the type of music that they will be singing, that you'll be hearing this week, comes from this century. It is perhaps had its beginning at the turn of this century. There was a minister, a United Methodist minister, by the name of Charles Albert Tinley, who was pastor of the Tinley Memorial United Methodist Church in Philadelphia, who, in order to spice up or in order to enhance his worship service, wrote songs. They were not the traditional spirituals, which come out of the period of slavery. They were not from the Methodist hymnal, but they were his own creations. Some of these songs, Stand By Me, When the Storms of Life Are Raging, Stand By Me, he wrote himself, and his daughter performed them during the service. He is seen as really the forerunner or the grandfather of black gospel music. There was a musician, a blues musician from Georgia, from Atlanta, a man named, his name isn't important right now. The important thing is that he listened to this music and decided to compose on his own. He had done a few blues numbers, double entendre pieces like I like it tight like that, and some other things. But he had a traumatic experience in his life. His wife and their unborn child both died in childbirth. He was traumatically taken over by it, and one of his friends told him that the only way to come out of this is to compose, to write, to put yourself back into your work. This young, heartbroken composer, gospel composer, wrote a song. Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand. Through the storm, through the night, lead me on to the light. Precious Lord, take my hand and lead me on. And of course, the composer was Mr. Thomas Darcy. And he is the only composer, I would imagine, who is in both the Country Music Hall of Fame as well as the Afro-American Musical Hall of Fame. He wrote a song entitled Peace in the Valley, which Red Foley and some other musicians have recorded. This is Thomas Darcy. And after him, he composed in the 1920s and 30s. He's still alive and still records. In the 1930s, he started a gospel singers convention where every year they would come, and I'm getting a witness here, and choir members would spruce up their acts and so forth. Working with him was a very strong singer by the name of Miss Sally Martin. They had as their protege at the time in the 1930s a young girl who had made her way from New Orleans to Chicago. She was a hairdresser, a big woman with a lovely voice, Mahalia Jackson. And so the three of these three persons, Thomas Darcy, Sally Martin, and Mahalia Jackson, toured the Midwest singing the compositions of one Thomas Darcy. Out of that group, or at least out of the Chicago area from whence they came, there came a young man by the name of James Cleveland. James Cleveland, who is called the Crown Prince of Gospel Music, perhaps the reigning creative person now, moved to California. And there he has started something called the Gospel Singers Workshop. And they, since the 1960s or thereabouts, they have been meeting. And he is a consummate composer. So the group that is singing comes out of this very rich and vibrant tradition. They are women singers. As I said, they stand on the shoulders of the Davis Sisters, the Caravans, the Ward Singers, and such soloists as Mahalia Jackson, Shirley Caesar, persons of that sort. Since this is a workshop and you will be tested over this thing, we might give you some take-home information, things you might want to pick up. Perhaps the most definitive work on gospel music now published is by a man named Tony Halbert, and it's entitled The Gospel Sound, Good News for Bad Times, which is sort of a, gives you an overview of the total gospel scene. Who were the founders? Who were some of the outstanding quartets, male, female, etc.? There's also an excellent book which has been done on Charles Albert Tinley. It's called Charles Albert Tinley, The Prince of Preachers. It's published by Abingdon Press, and it was done by a member of that church. His name escapes me now, but you could do it just with the title, and you could get the book in that particular way. There are records galore. Tony Halbert, when he did the Gospel Sound book, there's a companion four-volume LP, which is a sampler, and it has the old re-releases of these old artists on it with their particular hits. So you might want to look that up, or you could simply get the contemporary sounds. This group, by the way, has produced at least 3 45 records. Pastor Mills said that they are in the process of getting their LP, their first LP together. They have toured Europe. They have been to France, Sweden, Norway, and Germany. But this is basically what you're going to hear. As you see, perhaps the barbecue was much better than I thought that it was going to be. And as I said before, I will not sing for you. But are there any questions that I can perhaps answer, or any observations that those of you who have heard them, or ideas or questions that you have about black gospel music itself? Okay, just keep eating that watermelon, and hopefully by 1:30 the steppers will have gotten out of their barbecue thing. I am Dr. William Wiggins. I'm from Indiana University. I teach folklore and religion in the Department of Afro-American Studies at Indiana, and I'm counting the days until I can take a bath. Okay. All right, so until the college steppers come, then you can be at a relaxed state and turn around and look at the dancers or something like that. Do you have the time? What time do we have? 1:21. Well, what the heck? 1:18, 1:20.
I don't think they're going to make it today.
But we will be here on this stage, I think, just about every day at this time. We have down on the mall the grand generation looking at the old traditions. But there's also a new or cutting edge sort of thing. And these young men represent that particular angle of it, just as the performance on stage does. They are collegians. They're all students at the University of Pennsylvania. And they bear the tradition of stepping, a particular type of dancing and so forth that is indigenous or is very popular with black college students. I have taught at Lane College in Jackson, Tennessee, Texas College in Tyler, Texas, Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana, and I've visited all over. And what they do is not peculiar to them. I might add that what is involved here are these cultural imperatives, and then I'll shut up and let them talk. One, improvisation. You've got to be able to shift, to change, to meet the mood. In fact, they do not have a regular set routine by which they go on. I've been with them for a week, and they've changed it just about every day. You could not write it down. So in that disregard, they're much like Earl Garner, who when he gave a concert would never write out what he was going to do. He would play as he felt inspired to play. Or Mahalia Jackson, you would not have a program that would list the songs that Mahalia would play. It would be dependent upon how she was received. Secondly, there's a great deal of friendly competition. If you come back at 3:15, they'll be talking about some groups you've never heard of, but whom they know. The Kappa Alpha Psi's, the Omega Psi Phi's, the Phi Beta Sigma's, and the Alpha Phi Alpha's, which are other male, these are black fraternities. And they will sing the praises and the charm and the beauty of the sororities, the AKAs, the Delta Sigma Thetas, and the Phi Beta Sigmas. Zeta Phi Beta, I'm sorry, excuse me, I don't want to get them gentlemen on the wrong side of the track. Okay, but now, why don't we first, one thing that they do have, which is common with the steppers over here and in Black Life, each of them has a nickname. You know, it is not enough that you are christened or you are born with a particular name, but you have to get your own identity. And I wonder if they would introduce themselves first, tell you who they are, that is who mom and daddy know that they are, and now that they have coming into adulthood, whom their peers say that they are, which is very important. So could we start with these gentlemen over here who refuse to get on the stage? Yeah.
My name is Glenn Glasgow, and I'm from the University of Pennsylvania, and I'm a finance major. I'm originally from San Antonio, Texas.
And your nickname?
My line name is what we have are line names. They're not nicknames, line names. And my line name was Quick Draw.
What is a line? What is a line?
A line is a group during which we're trying to be initiated into our social fellowship, Groove Five Groove. And there also are names given to a line of people that go over at the same time. And since I went over by myself, the name of my line was the Eight Ball.
How you doing? My name is Carlton Yearwood. I'm from New York. I'm a senior economics major at the University of Pennsylvania. My line name was E-Man because I could do everything. Everything.
E as in everything but excellent. This is the man that you'll see at the front of the line.
Hi, y'all. I'm Eric Rutherford. I'm from West Philadelphia. I'm an economics major, University of Pennsylvania, going into my senior year. And if I hold this mic long enough, you'll be able to guess my nickname. it was Sir Rap-A-Lot. I talk a lot, okay?
Yeah, Sir Rap-A-Lot. Let's move right along here.
My name is Joe Jackson, and I'm a graduate of University of Pennsylvania, and my nickname is Sir Sinister.
My name is John Guthrie. I'm a senior at the University of Pennsylvania. I'm a sociology major. I'm from Newark, New Jersey, and my nickname is UltraVod.
My name is Terry Henderson. I'll be a junior at the University of Pennsylvania in the Wharton School. My major is marketing, and my line name was Mr. T.
No, it wasn't. It was Sir Squint. Because he squinted a lot when he was online. When he was pledging, you ask him a question, he'd be squinting at you, answering you.
Thank you, Sir Rap-A-Lot. Mr.
T.
Hi, I'm Jeff Edwards. I'm also from Newark, New Jersey. I'm a junior in the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. And Eric, be quiet. My line name was Mr. Smooth.
That's what he wanted it to be. It was Kermit.
As you can see, this is a very serious social organization that we have here.
Okay, now, what you do is called stepping. Is that correct? Okay. When do you normally step?
We step, like my line brother here at Carlton said, he's my line brother because I pledge with him. Also pledge with John. It was five of us, the unbroken five. We went over in 82. And see, I'm talking, right? Right? But Carlton said we step everywhere, in the shower, anywhere. If you know, it's just a form of expression. We can do it anytime, like on the bus, anywhere.
In your living room.
Yeah.
I'm finished now.
Okay, he said in the living room, wherever. But don't you have stepping contests, or do you ever?
Yeah, we have various step competitions that we enter throughout the various years. It sort of keeps us in practice.
Who would be involved in that? I mean, where would they be held?
They are, you know, various organizations give exhibitions or competition. And, you know, they usually ask all the major organizations, you know, to come along and participate, the ladies and the gentlemen.
How do they determine who wins?
Usually the organization which comes out with the best step show and the most original, you know, routine is usually the winner.
And that's determined by applause or what?
Sometimes by applause, most times by judges.
All right.
Does everybody know what stepping is? Maybe we'll show you a little something right now.
Yeah, do a step.
I need somebody to give me a hand.
Move those mics there. We need a little help
here. We're going to move the mics. We're going to move backwards.
I'm not stepping.
Is that enough?
The step that they're going to do is called the ultimate. All of our steps have names. And, you'll check it out with the sayings and the words to the song, the step.
You need a mic?
What E-Man is doing right now is called freaking. Freaks mean, like, see, we have a regular rhythm, like Joe and Glenn are doing now. That's the regular beat. Now, E-Man is freaking, meaning that he can make up his own beat, but actually stay in beat. We're very proud that, you know, we're very proud as a fellowship to be able to do this. Some groups, when they step, they really don't have that set rhythm enough to come back into a beat. Like, I could get up right now and just do anything, you know, and it would be in beat.
One of the important things to notice about stepping is that we don't, stepping is something that you have to do for a while to get it used to in your mind. We don't keep beats count 1, 2, 3, 4. We don't really listen hard. It's something that you have to develop an instinct for. Each one of us, you know, have that instinct to just come into a step and go with the flow. Even in the step show, if one of us happens to miss a beat, we can maneuver our feet so that we will still come in on the beat.
As you see right now, all three of them are actually doing different steps. Joe in the middle. Joe in the middle has chosen to go away from the ultimate step and make up his own step, which is actually what Joe does all the time in the show. It just so happens that Joe is usually wearing something other than what we're wearing, so everyone thinks that he's supposed to be doing that. So we win on both occasions there. Glenn, see, I'm proud of Glenn because I was Glenn's DP, Dean of Pledges. See, Glenn started with four line brothers, meaning that there were four other people pledging with Glenn. Okay? When it was time for the line to go over, there was only one point that went over. Glenn was the point. So so he went over by himself, and he's only been stepping a couple of months. You see the hands, the feet, everything. And if you let us go along, we just might make up something new, and you just might see it before we actually do it ourselves as a group. But right now, we really should stop for a minute and answer some questions in which you may have about stepping.
Give him a hand, please.
Does anyone have any questions? Sound man. The question was, when do we actually think stepping began? And I'll let one of my brothers tell you. Jeff.
You know, no, stepping is a form of African dance, okay? We all are students at the University of Pennsylvania. There we have a diverse crowd of people, and I've been approached several times by people from other countries and nationalities and asked me, what is that dance you do? That's something similar to what we do at home. And so stepping is a form of African dance. We have a few steps that tell you, step and start in Africa, and they called it dance. This step we do will make you move, put you in a trance. A step to the side, and you shall see just who we be, for we're the bad bold brothers of G5G. See, stepping is a form of African dance, and we've changed just a little bit, but it's still very similar.
Might add before we go in there that a couple of things are what they do with their hands. This is a remaking of something. During the slave celebrations, the most popular dance was something called Patting Juba. It's Juba this and Juba that, and Juba stole my little cat. The patting of the thighs, of the chest, and then of course no black youngster, self-respecting youngster would grow up not knowing how to pat Hambone. Right. Hambone, where you been, around the world, I'm going again. Yep. And this sort of thing here, which you know, could someone give a Hambone to someone here?
All right. I'm gonna do a little bit of something that I remember from my childhood. It's not very complex, but here we go. Hamo, have you heard? Papa gonna buy you a mockingbird. If that mockingbird don't sing, Papa gonna buy you a diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, Papa gonna buy you a bottle of wine. If that bottle of wine get broke, Papa gonna take it back to the store. If that store man tell a lie, Papa gonna punch him dead in the eye.
Papa's mean.
If the eye turn black and blue, Papa gonna punch the other one too. That's it.
All right. So you can see the variations are the building upon. In other words, this is what a youngster would learn, 8, 10, 11, 12. And you can see that they carry cultural baggage to pen. Okay, sir, rap.
Oh, I wasn't really gonna say too much.
Oh.
Come on now. Any more questions out there? I think I saw a couple of more hands out in the audience. Feet, raise your feet. Wiggle your ears.
Does anybody want to know what this is right here?
Yeah. Question up front. Okay, the question was, does most of our stepping routines have words? And yes, they do. We like to communicate verbally and with our feet and with the beats. And just a simple example could be a step we do called the elbow. And if you were to go over to the tent at 3:15, you would definitely see us do the elbow. We would elbow some people, elbow some more people.
Could you give us at least a line or two here? I mean, so she could hear what you're saying. Get
a line or two of the elbow. Demonstration, E-Man. E-Man shy today. Oh, his voice hurts. Come on, let's do the elbow.
elbow your mother, elbow your father, elbow your sister, elbow your brother, elbow the alphas, elbow the because we say something else. We're not the last. If you don't like us, then kiss our you want to pledge. Here's what you do. Just send a letter to group by group. Then you go back into it. So,
all right. Now, what you can see now that they have built upon something else here, there is a verbal game which you, every self-respecting black youngster, also male youngster, learns coming up. Depends on where you come from. Where I came from, we call it the dozens. Where they come from, they may call it sounding, woofing, what have you. But sounding. It's basically a verbal combative game in which you have to, the youngster has to learn to think on his feet and has to return insult for insult. And just like in international affairs where you have escalation, here you escalate in terms of the members of the family that you know, insult. And when you get to one's mother, of course, that is the ultimate. And the object is not to lose your cool, to remain a Mr. Smooth.
Like,
if you cry, you lose.
Ultravide.
Yeah, ultravide.
See, this is, see, John hasn't said anything all day, and I just wanted to point this out because this is he's very characteristic of his name. As you see, the elbow on the knuckles and the fist to the chin. This is ultravide. John's just chilling out.
Yes, that's a question. Okay. Explain. Okay.
Okay, explain the tattoo is not a tattoo. Okay, Joe will explain the brand.
The branding that we have, you know, developed, well, we weren't the first ones to do it. Branding is more or less an identifier. It's a voluntary thing. Some members have them and some members don't. We sort of kind of attach our brotherhood in the terms of the similar tribalism that was back in Africa. And many African tribes had characteristic brandings, you know, markings on their chest and their arms and everything. And, you know, it sort of passed over to the black fraternal structure.
Yeah, I might add that this is only allowed after the, as you said here, which Glenn finished the line. Only after you have successfully completed, you know, the initiation rite, are you allowed to do that. In other words, it signifies that one has, it is a mark of a rite of passage that you have, you know.
As you see, Glenn just got branded a couple of days ago, around a week ago, and it's a fresh hit. It'll heal. In approximately about 3 weeks, it'll heal. You keep it clean with peroxide and whatnot, and the finished result could either be like mine, or it could come out lighter, you know, darker. Yes, it does. It involves fire. Yes, it does.
Yes. Is there another question? I thought there was another. Someone else had that. Or do you want? Do we have a follow-up question here? Yes.
Question.
Why do you make the brand so large?
Some guys are pretty big. I have a very little in comparison to some of the brothers. Some of the brothers down south, as we, you know, some of them have G5G on their arm. And, you know, come on, I'm very conservative, as you see. I have a smaller one. But they vary in size, and even in the Greek for. Yeah, you can get them on your leg. You can get them anywhere. Some of the Greek members have them on their chest. The brother in the back. Oh, that's my line, brother Jesse. I'm from Philadelphia. Come on in, Jess. I pledge with Jesse. You don't want to come. All right. Okay. Any more questions?
What?
Hot dogs?
No. Nope.
Notes? We don't sing. We don't sing, Holmes. Any more questions anywhere?
Yes.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Lion Sisters? Is that a term used at Maryland Eastern Shore? I saw your shirt. Maybe you could come up. Maybe you could. Yeah. Come on.
Yes, go bring up. Bring up.
Whoa, what up?
Let's give her a hand here. Who
is yes, yes.
You have Line Sisters?
Line Sisters. Explain what you mean by Line Sisters so everyone will know.
Like the Sigmas have Zetas, which are Line Sisters.
Okay. Let's turn that up. As far as a sister group like the Phi Beta Sigmas, the guys in a Greek fraternity, their sisters would be Zeta Phi Beta, and I'm not sure exactly of the others. Maybe Alpha Phi Alpha has the AKAs. Are the AKAs the sisters? And maybe the Omega Psi Phis would be Delta Sigma Theta, right? Okay, Swing Phi Swing was the name of our sister organization. Right now, they're just Swing Incorporated, and the actual spelling of the word swing would give away the meaning right there. Sisters with interest in groove. So, yes, we do have our sister group also. You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Do we have any other questions? Yes, one right here.
Up front. Hand motions when we're stepping? We do have various hand motions when we step. We point at people a lot. We elbow people a lot. Not a lot, but I mean, that's just one example. I get to you in a minute. there are hand symbols, yes, but for the most part, we just like to establish the rhythm with whatever we do first, and then any pointing or anything that comes out of it would just be extra.
Yes.
In the back.
Do we have any philosophies or whatever? Okay, Glenn.
I can see I'm going to have to go in the back again. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. The question was, do we have any philosophies that we go by as a fellowship besides dancing? Yes. Joe?
We have various philosophies that we instill within the members as they come into the organization. Most of them generally have to deal with brotherhood. We do various things within the pledge process to get the members very close to each other. We instill a philosophy of unity, of independence, all right, but also accepting each member as they are, okay? As far as the organization, we have decided to stay a non-Greek organization because for various reasons. And we, you know, we like the idea. Our organization was founded by 14 black members in 1962. And what they had decided was that to get away from the traditional Greek system and establish a system that would be within line with the current times in the 60s. And that's how Groove got into being. Groove is now one of the largest fellowships, the largest fellowship in the United States. And we're spread out pretty much between Boston all the way out as far as Texas. And we're doing pretty good.
Do you have any social services or things that you render, not only just the brotherhood with each other, but let's say with youngsters in the community, any community type action?
Terry? Jeff? Jeff?
Yes, we do various things for our community. One thing that we do, we're involved with Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Philadelphia, and we take on a youngster and become their big brother or big sister. And we also do tutoring services. One of our things that we feel strongly about is bringing the community to the university, because the two have been separated, because the people in the neighborhoods feel as though that they aren't supposed to mingle within the college, and there's a lot of programs there that would benefit them, and it will also benefit us by having them there. So we have political leaders come down on campus, we have dance clubs come down on campus, and various things. We give talent shows every year. And we do, we had skating parties. So there's also fun things. We give also regular parties. We do things that give people fun and education at the same time, hopefully.
Jeff mentioned Big Brothers. That's kind of ironic because I just got back yesterday. I took my little brother to the Phillies game, and I just got finished driving all morning to get back here for, you know, for this morning's events. Yeah, we do a lot of fundraising and things which will involve youth in the community because they're at an age where they can be influenced. Just today we had a school teacher come up and asked us if we could step at their at her grade school, and we said sure because we do those sorts of things all the time. If kids can look at us and say, hey, they're in college, they're having fun, they're getting an education, and they're still maintaining an identity, then it's something that we feel very good about doing. We don't charge price, money or anything. So not always. But if you'd like to give it to us.
Depends on the situation.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
I just said it depended on the situation. We've done community centers, elementary schools, high schools, so forth.
Any more questions? Questions?
I think we have time for one more question.
This got to be a good question. Something hard, something that you don't think I can answer or think that we can answer. Bet we can. Okay, go ahead. Okay, the question was, do we think that stepping is positive for the black community and as a whole, and how might we benefit or as a community benefit from it? As you see, just having you here right now listening about stepping, I mean, if we didn't step but we just existed as a fellowship, we may not be right here right now. Talking to you, answering your questions, and having the exposure that we do on the National Mall, Smithsonian Institute. I mean, I'm from West Philadelphia, and we go to school there, and I'd probably still be there, doing a summer job or something. So, not just for the black community. I happen to believe stepping helps everybody understand just who we are as people, basically, and that we can communicate through different art forms, that's just a plus. So, stepping, I think, benefits every race, not just black people.
I think further, it is a cultural imperative. It's much the same as an Irish youngster doing the jig or at the halftimes of the University of North Carolina games or West Virginia when they come out and they clog or they step. In other words, unbeknownst to them, what is being reaffirmed is an aesthetic, is a culturally agreed upon mode of identification. And a part of that identity as one being Afro-American is the ability to dance, to move. And what they are doing is affirming that. They're affirming the intricacy of rhythm. They're polyrhythmical. A lot of their steps, I mean, they have 3, 4, 5 different steps, improvisation. And so in a real sense, they're saying that. It's just like Muhammad Ali was champion of the world, but he was loved by his people a bit more because he could rhyme and he could cap and he could talk that smack, which was something that
Bill
the larger
Wiggins.
Group could take care of. Come back at 3:15, you will see the dastardly alphas, kappas, omegas, and sigmas go down to death. But we will see you. Let's thank the gentleman again for coming in and talk with us. We'll see you on the entertainment stage.
3:15.
3:15, groove, fire, groove.